Hi, I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England, Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
We are, as always, so thankful to have you here for our case profiles, as they are so very important to us. And as I am sure, they are important to you guys as well.
Yeah, if you guys are not familiar with our mini episodes, our case profiles is where we tell each other and you guys, most importantly, about cases of people of color based in New England who just do not get enough media attention, media coverage, and coverage from law enforcement.
These case profiles were, quite honestly, Katie's brainchild. You were the one who came up with them, and it started out as just Instagram posts and website posts, and it blossomed into this great series that we've been doing for over a year now, which is really exciting. And as I said last episode that we did for our case profiles, I did not think we would make it this far with them because I thought we would run out of cases.
Definitely.
But people have been submitting some, we've been finding some, and we've been able to take the ones that are extra small and post them on our Instagram and website if we can't make a case out of them. So it's been really good, and I feel like we've got a lot of reach with these episodes.
Absolutely.
And for those of you who don't know, like Katie just laid out for you, these cases are for people of color in New England who just do not get enough representation in the media. These are people who have been murdered or have disappeared, perhaps been abducted. Their deaths are mysterious. These people have very little media coverage, and it is because, as we all know, New England is predominantly white. It's just the truth. And there is predominant racism in the media. And our goal is to bring light to these cases that just need it the most. So with these case profiles today, Katie, what will happen is you will tell us, as in me and the listeners, your case profile story. And then I will tell you and the listeners mine. I have not heard your story. You have not heard mine, so we'll be hearing it for the first time. So our oohs, our ahs, our questions are all genuine. Katie, I would love to hear your story today.
Sure. I will be telling you, Liz, as well as our lovely listeners, about the murder of John Evers Robinson.
Okay.
My sources today are the New Haven Independent, Uncovered.com, Web Sleuths, and SavageWatch.com.
Okay.
John Evers Robinson, nicknamed Rockhead, but spelled R-O-K-K-E-D.
Oh.
Never would have guessed that.
Yeah, no.
Grew up in Kansas with his mother before moving to New Haven, Connecticut with his father at the age of 14.
Okay.
He was a really good student. He loved music.
Mm.
He had his own hardcore band called Sold on Murder.
Oh, he played in. That sounds kind of cool.
So that's like a hardcore band.
Yeah.
He played bass. He even wrote music for it and sang in it. So he was just kind of like, it was his band.
Nice.
Yeah. A lot of the music was about anti-capitalism, anti-colonialism, love, and mental health.
Nice.
He was very smart and he was really good with words. He was known as someone that would use this really big, complex SAT word correctly in a sentence.
Nice.
And just very casually, he wasn't someone that would use a big word to sound smart and wouldn't use it in the right context.
Okay, cool.
He was very poetic, and he was one of those kids, I saw in a couple different articles, he was one of those kids that just got along with everyone. He had friends, but he was able to drift between social groups and cliques, and he really got along with everybody.
Nice.
And he was the class president and was very liked and well-respected.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice guy.
In the months leading up to his death, John was working on the band's first album, and he was really determined to make this happen.
Oh.
Some places reported that he was selling drugs to fund the production of the album.
Mm.
After he died, John's friends and family pooled money to produce the record posthumously. At the age of 24, John Evers Robinson was murdered on March 12, 1990, in the office he used as a music studio at 178 Temple Street in New Haven, Connecticut. He had been evicted in the weeks prior from this office, but he did still have a key, so he was using it without permission.
Oh.
John had died from blunt force trauma to the neck and head, and he had skull crush injuries.
Wow.
It took authorities 2 days to find his body.
Whoa. Shit.
Police determined that the murder weapon was a musical instrument from the studio, but the specific murder weapon was never found, and a drum set that was in the studio was missing.
Oh no.
When they found his body.
Yikes.
Police believe that John knew his killer because of the lack of signs of forced entry to the studio.
Okay.
Some people believe that the murder was a robbery gone wrong or a failed drug deal. People speculated that he might have been, you know, they knew he was selling marijuana, but they were suspecting maybe he was selling harder drugs to earn more money or to earn money faster.
Yeah.
Other people believe that he had stolen a symbol from a neo-Nazi skinhead band, and in return, they murdered him and took back the whole drum set.
Oh.
Or took the drum set that the stolen symbol might have been on.
Right. Oh, that's terrible.
It's also believed that more than one person was involved in John's murder because he was not a small man in any sense.
Oh.
He was 6'3".
Oh!
215 pounds.
Oh my god.
And, like, muscular.
Yeah,
he
big
wasn't
dude.
Just a lanky.
Yeah.
215 pounds. He was muscular.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. At his funeral, Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd was played, and everyone sang along, and there was not a dry eye in the place from the articles that I read.
Aw.
Bob Osborne, who coached John Evers Robinson in the New Haven Youth Soccer League about 8 years before his murder, stated, quote, John danced to the often frenzied rhythms of life daily. He swept us along with his emotions. We're still waiting for his smile. We're still stunned and angered by his absence.
Wow.
John's case was reopened in 2009 when a person of interest was being investigated under a federal agency, but nothing, to my knowledge, came of that.
Oh.
The latest that I saw was that there's a $20,000 reward for anyone with any information leading to the arrest to the person or people responsible for John's murder.
Okay.
Anyone with any information on the murder of John Evers Robinson is asked to please call the New Haven Police Department at 203-946-6304.
Wow. That's so sad. It just seems like he was such a good guy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was selling drugs, it seems like it was almost one of those situations where he felt that he had to in mm-hmm. order to make it in the music industry, which is one of those tough situations where it's like either or. Because the music industry, that's a really tough gig, as we all know. And it's unfortunate that he felt that he had to do that in order to make it. And clearly, it's possible that it was the cause of his demise.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people speculate that too about the neo-Nazi skinhead band.
Right.
Because his music was actively anti-capitalism, anti-colonialism.
Right. Yeah.
He himself was black. He's not going to stand for racism in his community. And so this band, you know, they're active neo-Nazis. They're proud neo-Nazis. And so afterwards, I read in the Web Sleuth thread that police were saying, you know, there's no evidence of this neo-Nazi band. We don't know what you guys are talking about. But, I mean, neo-Nazis and police usually run in the same circles. So
right,
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the lead detective on John's case was the guitarist for the band. Like,
right.
Let's be real. So even though some people were saying, no, that's just a rumor that was going around, I think it's very interesting that supposedly a symbol was stolen.
Right.
And they can't find the drum set that was in the studio when everybody left.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, John had gone in to work on stuff and a drum set was there.
Right.
I think that's interesting.
I think you're definitely onto something there. How tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Liz,
What
awful tragic story do you have to share with us today?
I happen to have the story of the murder of a young gentleman named Ace Jackman, which is arguably a dope-ass name.
Absolutely.
Just saying. Like, how powerful? That could be a superhero. Unfortunately, however, Ace was murdered in 2017. My sources today: National Gun Violence Memorial, Boston 25 News, Macomb Daily, and a GoFundMe for his funeral that was organized by his mother. On July 17th, 2017, Kaisha Skinner, mom of four, who was living in Dorchester, Massachusetts, was scrolling through her Facebook news feed, just chilling, hanging out. It's the middle of the afternoon. It's like 5:30. It's, you know, she's hanging out. When she saw several Facebook posts from locals, you know, that caught her attention, it was like all of a sudden everyone was posting like, oh my goodness. Apparently, there had been a shooting within the last like 10 minutes on Blue Hill Avenue in Dorchester. This immediately sent chills down her spine because not 10 minutes earlier, Keisha's 18-year-old son, Ace Jackman, had called her and told her that he would be home soon. He was leaving work and he was dropping off something at a friend's house. You know, he was leaving work, you know, running errands, in that he was buying some weed and heading home, you know, whatever. The fear she was having from reading these posts was because Ace was going to be buying weed off of somebody who lived on Blue Hill Avenue.
No.
So she read these posts and she was freaking out. So naturally, Keisha, she called Ace's cell phone, was like, please pick up, please pick up, please pick up. Because, hello, this is so fucking scary. Her son is on exactly where these gunshots were heard. And so she calls him, no answer. So she runs to the neighborhood. She knows where it is. She rushes over there, only to discover her son's body underneath a white sheet. Just like you see in the movies, you know, like they've covered him already. He had been shot 3 times. So according to police, it appeared that a man who was armed had confronted Ace on the street and began firing at him for whatever reason. We don't really know why. And then Keisha thinks that Ace then took out his own gun and fired back at him in, like, self-defense, which clearly went very wrong. How, for whatever reason this started, it went very poorly for both men. The other man, who police knew, like, they knew who this person was, they never publicly released his name, but we know that he was 21 years old, he was rushed to the hospital, he was also wounded. As far as I know, he was not killed, he survived his injuries, and he was released, you know, he was treated and released, and that was that. He was never charged with anything, even though it's likely that he shot and killed Ace. Keisha had learned from locals and people who, like, maybe have witnessed Ace's murder who this guy was, so she knows who he is. And despite his identity being known to the police, clearly suspected by Ace's family because she learned his identity, and the fact that he was also shot, sent to the hospital, treated, and then sent home, they know who this guy was, but he was never charged with anything. Could it be possible that Ace was the one who fired the first shot at this guy, and then this guy shot back and Ace died as a result? I guess, but regardless, a man is dead and nobody is being held responsible for it. And not to mention that Ace turned 18 like 5 days before this happened. He was just a young man. I know, so awful. Keisha's quoted as saying, I feel a lot of hurt, a lot of anger, and I feel that somebody seen and heard and somebody needs to say something. But because no one is willing to come forward, it's not going to go nowhere. Like I said, Ace had just turned 18 just days before his murder. He had spent some time in the Department of Youth Services following an arrest after stealing a car, which, you know, again, kind of makes these case profiles people, there's some bad, like, drama surrounding a lot of these victims, and a lot of police often say, like, oh, gangs, it's drug violence, blah, blah, blah. However, with Ace, he had turned his life around from this. He got his high school diploma. He also was a personal trainer at the time of his death, so he'd gotten a good job. He had a lot of friends, and he'd actually just enlisted in the Navy when he was killed. So he was really heading for the right things, and he was a good older brother. I believe she was saying he was the oldest of her 4 children. So now she had this terrible sadness on her. And then I got some great statistics that I found from Boston as far back. I think it was updated in 2018, so they're outdated now, but from this website, the Macomb Daily, that had a lot of information about Ace's murder that I thought was really interesting as far as the disparity between people of color and white people and their crimes. And you guys know I always like to add statistics if I find them because they're so damning. Mm-hmm. So, since 2007, and this is up until 2018, Boston police have made an arrest of nearly 90% of the homicides with white victims. but only 42% of the victims. Yes, your face right now, Katie. Only 42% of the homicides with Black victims, who, by the way, account for the majority of the city's killings. Right? She has her head in her hands, people.
You know, that is just so interesting. Mm-hmm. Isn't that just so interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Is that they're picking and choosing.
Oh,
how low?
Wait a second. This last fact will make you even more mad. Of the 435 homicides with Black victims, 254 remain unsolved. Ready? Of the 57 homicides with white victims, only 6 are unsolved. Right? Quite literally picking and choosing. But isn't that insane?
Hmm.
Like, maybe it was easier to solve these homicides of these white people, whatever. But that many victims of homicide are Black, with over half are still on being unsolved. Where does that become a problem?
Clearly, and like we've been screaming from the rooftops from Case Profile episode 1.
Right.
Obviously, we know they have the resources to be solving homicides.
Correct.
Because they're solving homicides, right? We clearly, this is just a clear picture of where these resources are going.
Mm-hmm.
They have the resources. Mm-hmm. They're just allocating them towards certain cases.
Yep.
So interesting to me.
Yep. Hmm. And again, these statistics are now outdated by several years. And that was just for the city of Boston. So I would imagine those numbers are much higher. And the rate of them being unsolved is probably also much higher. But, you know, it kind of just opens your eyes even more. And it's pretty devastating. And I'm sure Keisha Skinner, thinking about her poor son who was lost so tragically and so soon after he just became an adult, you know, he was turning his life around. He had a good job. He had friends and family who loved him very much. Listing in the Navy, that's a huge deal. Great way to turn your life around. And it was all taken from him for seemingly no reason. Even a good reason is not a good reason to murder someone. Truly devastating.
That is fucked up.
Absolutely.
Wow. Thank you for sharing those statistics. That got me fired up over here.
I know. You look ready to punch. I don't even want to be near you right now, and I haven't killed anybody. It's pretty upsetting.
It's reasons like this that sometimes I wish we did a video recording podcast.
Right.
Only so you guys can see our facial expressions when these things are shared. But wow.
I know.
Good job. Good case.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you.
Guys, we, as always, want to know what you think about our cases that we talk about. We are always open to discussion about racial disparities and crime, anything like that. And we are, of course, always looking for more case suggestions, whether it be for a full episode or, of course, our case profiles. So please, if you have any recommendations for people of color who are murdered, abducted, mysteriously died in New England, please send them our way. You can send them to us on Instagram, truecrimene. You can send them to us through our email, truecrimene@gmail.com. You can even go over to our website with our self-proclaimed handy-dandy submission tool to send them to us anonymously if you want.
Yeah, that tool is a really great way to be anonymous. We've had a couple submissions just because people have known the victim personally or known their family, or, you know, it hit close to home and maybe suspicious circumstances, or, you know, you just want to suggest a case and you don't want a little shout out or a mention at the top of the episode. So you can obviously, of course, leave your name. We appreciate it either way, but just any kind of suggestion that you guys have.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is too small. Like you said at the top of the episode, Liz, if you guys are thinking, I don't know, there's only one source, there's only one paragraph, I don't know if there's a lot of information, you guys would be surprised what we can do with such little information.
Mm-hmm.
And worst case scenario, we put it on our Instagram and our website to still get it out there. So no case is too small.
Absolutely. Very well said, Katie. And with that, we'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Goodbye.